In Ireland, nothing gets us talking like lions.
Tea?
Small talk.
Well, Jimmy, shocking weather we're having.
Big talk.
Even I could have played county. Office talk.
I'm MIA in the AM, but I'll circle back on the KPIs.
Real talk.
Milk before tea? Should be a criminal offence.
You could say we talk too much.
But the truth is,
we don't talk nearly enough. Lions. Puts the talk into tea.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune's with us once again to answer some of your parenting questions. If you do have a question for Joanna, afternoon@newstalk.com is the address to send it to. Afternoon, Joanna. We've just had a new baby boy and all is going well. We have an older daughter, 21 months, who loves her new brother and shows him so much affection, hugs, kisses. There is just one thing that she started yesterday, and that was biting. She was being a bit rough with the baby and I asked her to be gentle and she tried to bite me. I told her calmly that biting was bold and we just moved on. But I'm worried this is now the start of something and would like to try and deal with it before it escalates into something more, i.e. biting me, her baby brother or other children. I would appreciate if you give me some advice on how to handle this situation.
Well, congrats on the new baby. That's lovely. Yeah. But I always think, Sean, when you're still counting your child's age in months, they're still a baby. Mm-hmm. So when you say you have an older 21-month-old, you've two babies. That's what you're dealing with. And one of them has teeth. Yeah. And she's at the
knows how to use them.
And absolutely. But what she doesn't have and doesn't know how to use is how to process frustration. She might be delighted with this little baby, but there's also the part of her that can't express this little usurper has come in now and upscuttled my world order. So instead she bites because that's a very effective way of communicating frustration, anger. I'm fed up with this, but she doesn't have the language, the emotional fluency at all, but even the verbal skills at 21 months to express a range of emotion other than that. So behaviour is how they do it. And biting is such an effective behaviour. So I'm not minimising it. And at the same time, I am, because it is a developmental thing at her age. You know, it's very, very common. It's mostly a phase that children go through. And as language improves, you see this quickly die down. It is very much about how she's a low frustration threshold. In general, I wouldn't expect a 21-month-old to have anything but a low frustration threshold. And she's dealing with big life changes. You know, like really big life changes. So the best thing you can do is spot you've said no. I mean, whether you say it's bold or not is up to you, but the no is the important part of that, to be honest with you. A gentle yet firm, very clear no. No biting. And your face and your voice, the tone of voice has to match what you're trying to convey. So it's a serious voice, as my child would call it, the serious voice comes out. And you use that. And then because she's so little, you very quickly move to redirection and distraction. Let's get you set up with some blocks. Let's take out whatever it is you like to play with. Let's play for a few minutes and get her engaged in something else. To sit down and wax lyrical and talk to her about her behavior, absolute waste of time at her age. And it's ineffective, but it's only going to frustrate you. So I think you're in this phase of biting. Some children never do it, by the way. I don't want to say all children do it, but those who do it, do it. She didn't bite the baby. I do want to point that out. She bit mom.
Yeah.
So the frustration might be in that direction, but I would watch her around the baby.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
In general, I'd watch a 21-month-old around a baby anyway because of how impulsive they are. But I would watch her around the baby, keep that firm no and come down to her eye level, hold hands. Never come down to the eye level of a toddler who's angry without holding their hands because you're at the perfect height for a punch if you do so. Hold her hands, just rub. Like if you hold her hands and put your thumb on top of her hands, just rub little circles, gentle yet firm, sway her hands side to side, just bringing in some of that co-regulation through touch and through rhythm and synchrony. No, we don't bite. Now let's go over here and do something else. And you're just going to have to repeat and repeat and repeat that and keep an eye with her.
Yeah. And biting is just a thing that happens in some
people. It really is.
This isn't necessarily because there's a new baby on the scene.
It could be totally coincidental.
Yeah.
It could be that she would have done this anyway. Mm. And it's, you know, it often we see it with children this age, like I said, because of language and verbal expression and just being able to manage their emotions. But also when they're cutting a tooth, somebody else's fleshy arm can feel very nice on sore gums. So sometimes it's a sensory seeking motivation behind it. It's not bold. That's what I meant by saying that is your own choice, but it means nothing to her anyway. It's more important that you stick with the no and the redirection. But also do get curious, could there be a little painful back tooth coming or anything like that at that age?
Our six-year-old son goes to Lego Club every Wednesday after school. Absolutely loves it. They use grown-up bricks and he is really thriving with it. The problem is this, because his sister's only three, we only use baby Lego Duplo at home. We have tried to separate areas for Duplo and grown-up Lego, but it's impossible because the younger one will always get at it. We're worried about giving the three-year-old access to the small Lego bricks in case she puts them in her mouth, but the older child is desperate to have proper Lego at home for her to practice on. Are we being overly protective here, or how long should we wait before giving them both access to grown-up Lego?
Love that we're calling it grown-up Lego.
Yeah.
It's just Lego. You know, but I get it. Look, choking hazard is the priority here, especially for children under three, okay? You know your child. If you have a three-year-old who's still very much at that oral phase where everything goes in the mouth, you have to parent accordingly. That's the bottom line. I understand your son wants those other bricks. That's what he's playing with in his little Lego club and what he wants to do. So what? A couple of things to think about with that. First of all, Lego, let's stick with the language, the grown-up blocks can be used maybe at the kitchen table while you're there. And they're both sitting there. One has the Duplo, one has the other one, but you're there supervising. The other thing to think about is getting a Lego mat, I'm going to call it. You know, one of those large grey squares. And I'm saying they're grey because I just saw one recently that was grey. They might come in other colours. But you can build your Lego onto the mat.
Yeah.
So the mat itself has the little sticky up bits for the Lego blocks to stick on. I'm being very technical here. Sticky up bits.
You've lost me there and all that lingo. Yeah.
But he can build on that mat.
Yeah.
And then the mat can be taken away, but all the building has happened on it. So it's a way of containing it. That can be a way to go about this. Supervising at the table, making sure with him, and he'll promise you anything because he wants to have the blocks, that every single block is tidied away at the end, but an adult will still have to check none of those teeny little pieces that we've all stood on in the mornings still exist. If he had his own bedroom, you could say your Lego stays in that bedroom. But when you have a three-year-old, Sean, they don't respect boundaries like whose bedroom that is, you know, and they're going to go in. I think explain to him, I know you love Lego and it's great you have your Lego club because you're learning so much. You have a sister who still likes to put things in her mouth. And as soon as that stops, we will be able to have those blocks in our house. It's going to change as she gets older and it'll change quickly. But I do think it's great he has his weekly Lego club. More of that. I think that's lovely for him.
Yeah.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
But I imagine it's going to be, in a practical sense, impossible to keep the three-year-old separated from...
It's the only way is full supervision while doing it. So you just simply say, now it's Lego time. It won't be free play Lego that he can just whimsically take out. And think of the mat, think of the table, think of supervising. It will pass. She is three.
Yeah.
It won't be this way for very much longer.
My husband and I separated 3 years ago and our 11-year-old son stays with him every second weekend. His dad collects him from school on a Friday, takes him to school on the Monday. In the last few months, my son has been complaining about going to see his dad. He's not refusing to go, just saying he does not like going. When I asked him what is the problem or reason, he says he does not like the long journey. It's a little over a 1 hour drive and that he does nothing at his dad's. I do think he might be bored there. And I think he also misses some of his friends when he's away. There has been a lot going on for his dad recently, as his own mother, who he now lives with, has been unwell. I'm not sure whether to raise my son's complaints with his dad or best just keep encouraging him to go. Communication between his dad and myself can be quite tricky, and he can be very defensive if I raise any issues about how he manages our son. My son has asked me not to tell his dad about his complaints, and he does not seem to want to say anything directly to him either. I think he does not want to hurt his dad's feelings. I don't like to see him so unhappy going. What do you think I should do? Any help would be appreciated.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
It's tricky, yeah. But there's layers to it. I mean, this kid isn't refusing to go,
yeah.
Just to be clear. So it's not, you know, for this parent to say, do I just keep making him go or encouraging him to go? He is going. He doesn't need that encouragement to go. What he is moaning. He's complaining. He's moaning. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and I think when our kids do that, they're often not looking for us to resolve or jump in and fix, but simply to listen and hear them and hold that space for them to go, oh, I hate the journey and I don't do anything and it's so boring. You go, oh, yeah, that doesn't sound like great fun. Okay, see you Monday.
Yeah.
But he is happy to go. Think as well, and there is a lot going on for dad. I do want to, you know, it is entirely possible that dad has been distracted and preoccupied with very real life stuff going on. And that, you know, when any of us are distracted and preoccupied with life events, we're not at our playful, engaged best. Mm. You know, so he may not be doing things. He might be just letting things slide and go on, do what you like, because he's got other stuff. I'm explaining, not excusing, but there is context to this. So, you know, if that context shifts, so too will the engagement, one would hope. But put this also in the landscape of your child's development. He's 11 years old. He's very much in that preteen stage now, where friends, activity, doing stuff, being out with mates, that's where he's developmentally at. That's his priority from both of you. I mean, he's likely, by the way, to say to his dad, I don't do anything at home with my mother either.
Yeah.
You know, I'm out with my friends all the time.
Yes.
That's where they're at. So there may be no more to this other than, I don't want to be away from my friends for that weekend when I could be out having fun or I could be gaming or I could be doing whatever it is he likes to do. I just think listen to him, hold space for the complaints. It is not for you to fix them. Okay. He hasn't asked you. In fact, he has specifically asked you not to.
Yeah. Yeah. So he
doesn't want dad spoken to.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I think it's important that kids, particularly kids this age, that they know they have someone they can give out to.
Yeah.
You know, where they can exhale some of that and just say, oh, I don't like it and I don't like it. And, oh, yeah, okay, that's off my chest now. Off I go. And can do that. Get curious if there's anyone around him at dad's house or granny's house. You know, is there cousins, for example? Are there any other family members nearby? Does he know, because he's there every second weekend, does he know any neighbours or any kids in the area that he's going to? Just get a bit curious if there's anyone he could meet up with and have friends at dad's. I do think that would be helpful. And of course, encourage him to talk to his dad, but otherwise, just listen. And encouraging him to talk to his dad isn't going on about it all the time, going, did you talk to your dad? What did you should talk to your dad? It's not like that. It's just saying, look, I think your dad's a grown up. He could take this. He could hear you out on it. If you want to talk to your dad about this, I'm telling you that is something you can do. And if he says, I don't want to go, fair enough, you can talk to me about it.
Yeah.
And I will listen to you.
Yeah.
But I think just hold space for that.
Yeah, if it's every second weekend and he's 11, imagine what he's missing every second weekend where, you know, his friends are maybe playing sports or doing stuff.
Well, that did strike me about sports, because the weekends are so consumed with that. So if he is genuinely missing out on activities he's heavily invested in, that's only going to become a bigger issue, not a smaller one, as he gets older. He's also, Sean, going to hit adolescence where he simply has more of a say in, I don't want to go or I'm not going. So I do think this will reach its own kind of outcome like that. And in due course, you know, if dad is at the moment dealing with quite a lot of personal family issues, but in due course, and he can say, you could encourage him to suggest something to his dad. Why don't we do this together?
Yeah, yeah.
Why, I'd love to do this. Can we go do it together? Can we see a movie? Can we, whatever it might be, that he can suggest some things to his dad if it's not coming from his dad.
Yeah, yeah, indeed, yeah. I have a bit of a problem with my 6-year-old daughter. She is the youngest of three, a well-able and very talented little girl. Although she thinks she's terrible at everything, I think the underlying problem is her bedwetting. She's never got control of it. The bed is wet pretty much every night. She often wets herself during the day. I've tried everything. No drinks after 5 p.m. Lots of toilet trips during the day. Reward traps. But nothing seems to work. She's now back in pull-ups. I couldn't keep up with the washing. I tried alarms 2 years ago, but maybe she was too young. I'm wondering, should I try them again? Or what should I do? I worry that this will have a very negative impact on her self-esteem and confidence. We always encourage her and tell her how good and talented she is at her activities. And she really is. My older two didn't have this bedwetting problem, so I'm at a bit of a loss. Would you have any advice? Yes, she's six. So there's one thing I imagine you're going to say there that she hasn't mentioned, that she hasn't done.
The GP.
Yeah.
In all of the list of things there, and so much has been tried, a GP consult at this stage is, if it hasn't happened, absolutely needs to happen. Mm-hmm. This is a child who hasn't regressed. She's never attained nocturnal dryness.
Yeah.
So now, in lots of these kinds of issues, kids are given a lot of years. It's not unusual for a high percentage of kids to struggle with dry time or nighttime dryness, rather. Mm. So often kids are closer to seven before medically things are looked at. But I certainly think now is the time to go to the GP and look at seeing, is there something else? Like when things like little bed alarms are mentioned, I don't have a clear opinion, a strong opinion either way on those, Sean. They work for some, they don't for others. But if your child is bedwetting because they're such a deep sleeper, don't kid yourself that alarm will wake them.
Yeah,
it won't.
Absolutely.
And by the time it wakes them, they're already wet.
Yeah.
So that's not a solution in and of itself. And I just think you need to know why she's struggling. This is a bright, talented, active little girl, and she hasn't been able to develop this skill. So I would be a fan of ruling out the medical. I always am. This isn't a behavioural thing that she just can't do. Let's be sure that there isn't something else going on there. And a GP consult would be my very first thing to do. Just to rule out any recurring UTIs, anything going on with the bladder. And I'd like that medically looked at.
Yeah. If the GP, though, says everything's hunky-dory, what's the next step then?
Then it's about going back to the very beginning, as if, you know, and doing nighttime training like you do when you're younger.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's much older, so actively involving her in it in a very gentle way, but not shying away from it. I know this is feeling a bit awkward. She's six, you know, she's very aware of it. I know it feels a bit awkward, but together we're going to work this out. Okay. Your body, when you go to sleep, just switches off and it's not hearing those cues. That's just the way some bodies are. So what we're going to do, as well as all these trips to the toilet during the day, not a fan of reward charts. I don't think they do anything. But I'm going to wake you during the night. I'm going to lift you or wake you or sleepwalk you into the toilet during the night as well. And we're just going to come at it in this way. But don't go down that behavioural route until you've ruled out the medical.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. This question could apply to any child anywhere. My seven-year-old daughter has suddenly turned against vegetables and will only eat very plain foods like butter, pasta or chips and nuggets. Granted, she was never the most adventurous eater, but she was okay with certain fruit and veg like apples, bananas, carrots and peas. In the past few months, she has suddenly taken against them and I struggle to get her to eat them anymore. I have tried to stick to the meals she used to love eating like chips and veg, but she will only eat the chips now. Is there anything causing this sudden aversion? What can I do to get her back on them? I'm out of ideas.
Oh, there's nothing more stressful for parents than children who don't eat. And especially when they did. And so, you know, they did and they could, but now they're not. Always look at, was there an illness, particularly a sore throat, anything like that? Was there any sensation of a lump getting caught? Any of that can trigger an aversion.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, if there's any kind of a gagging or like a choking sensation or simply swallowing with a sore throat, that can turn kids off eating foods that they previously did. However, and more likely, this so-called kind of picky eating, it often peaks around 7 years old for children, which is exactly where this kid is. And 2 months ago is the timing, because they're on the cusp of coming into middle childhood, you know, asserting more independence, making more choices. Food, and I often find, especially in my work, that what goes in and out of the body, you're thinking of toileting, eating, sleeping, they tend to be where kids play out a lot of early independence assertion. Mm. You know, well, I can be in charge of this and I'll decide this. So it's where we often see this kind of disruption. You would also want to look at, and you'll know her, you know, what way is she towards different sensory aspects of food? Because a sensory sensitivity can also be a factor in food aversion. But again, if there was anything around pain or a gagging sensation, that could feed into that. A single bad experience basically is enough to turn them off.
All vegetables.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It really could be.
But it never happens with chips. They might have a bad experience with a chip.
I mean, people don't write in to us because their child has stopped eating chips. That's different. But it can absolutely affect all foods like that. I would just say continued exposure without pressure.
Yeah.
That's the best approach to take. I avoid an emotional charge around food at all costs because I think you solve one problem while creating another.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't pay off. And what I find is that, and I say this as an adult recovered picky eater, I was such a picky eater as a child, and fights about food or demands to eat just made me want to, maybe says more about me, dig my heels in further and say, not eating it. And you can't make me. You literally can't make me eat it. I grew out of that. Most kids will grow out of that. And it's often around what's socially acceptable. And, you know, increasingly in schools, they're exposed to a range of foods at lunchtime now. Anyone doing this, school lunches and that. So they're seeing their peers eat things. And, you know, a lot of that and being encouraged in a positive attitude towards all foods is very, very important. I also think a teaspoon taste. So, you know, she did eat the list of veg that's listed here and the kind of fruits. You could put a teaspoon of carrot, for example, or peas or whatever it is, not on her plate or touching anything on her plate, but beside her plate. No demand, and nobody throws a parade if she eats it, but it's just there. Everyone has one and takes a little teaspoon of something that's not their favorite food, but they're trying it. And you're just going to do that and see, would that get it back into the diet? You could certainly do that. I think as well, changing the format of food can be very helpful. So if she would eat cooked veg, maybe trying something a bit more crunchy, maybe using a peeler so that it's ribbons of carrot rather than chunks or slices. But looking at, is there a way that you could mash it, ribbon it, change how it's cooked, mix up the, so it's still a carrot, but it's a little bit of novelty in how you're serving it. Model the behavior you want to see. So if you're trying something that you don't, we're all allowed not to like things, by the way, there are certain things you'll never like, but that you go, I don't like that, so I'm not going to eat it. It is okay to not eat that. I'm not sure about this food. It's not my favorite. So I'm going to give it a go because I want to build up a way of liking it. Model what you want her to do and let her see you doing it, but remove the emotional charge around food. Do not let this become something you fight over.
Yeah, absolutely. Just going back to the Lego. Someone says my brother, when he was younger, got a piece of Lego stuck up his nose.
Oh, yeah.
You had to go to hospital to have it removed.
Yep.
Not uncommon.
Not just mouths.
Yeah, not just mouths. And tell that parent to be careful with the Lego. It's a very expensive pastime. I have a 23-year-old addict.
I can relate to that. I could open a franchise of the store in my house. So I absolutely agree with that. Yeah.
And I have all the foot bruises to prove it. Joanna, thanks a million.
Thank
as
you.
Ever. Joanna, fortune there.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.